What's the pop culture podcast that features three aging Gen Xers and one dirty Xennial? It's Radio Labyrinth, hosted by Tim Andrews, Jeff Leboff, Stephanie Swain, and Autumn Fisher. Movies, TV, podcasts, comic books, music, and a labyrinth of tales about ourselves. You'll enjoy comedy, improv, impersonations, and recommendations for the coolest stuff you can watch, listen, or read. Check out Radio Labyrinth on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you catch your podcasts. Check us out at RadioLabyrinthPodcast.com.
Welcome to Mike TV episode 25, in which we will be covering HBO's Watchmen, season 1, episode 5, entitled Little Fear of Lightning. My name is Lisa, and joining me is Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hey, Lisa. How are we doing this week?
So good. I'm so excited to talk about this episode. How about you?
Each week, it's getting better and better, I think.
Oh, boy, is it ever. So, LG backstory.
Yeah, we get to look back through the looking glass.
This might be my favorite episode of the season so far.
It had a lot of, just as a character-driven show as this is, it really dives into one character. We're back at a character-centric episode again, which I love. We've been gushing over Tim Blake Nelson and his portrayal of Looking Glass, so we both are big fans of his. The Vite scene is just gets wackier and better each time.
My only criticism of this episode, not enough Lori, not enough Jean Smart. Because I think I would put still the she was killed by space junk, the Lori centric episode. I think that one's still my favorite.
Yeah, she has a couple scenes and she does have one. Yes. She still makes the most of her time on screen, which I like.
Some of my favorite scene. Mirror guy.
Yes. Yes.
So what I did in my notes for this week, and I'm going to try to stay consistent with it, much like when we talk about Angela and Sister Knight, try to call her Angela when she's in her civvies, Sister Knight when she's in her getup. I'll call him Wade when he's just Wade, and then LG Looking Glass when he's in his getup. So, yeah, here we go. It starts right off with the Watchmen title screen. It's a radio. It's a old-timey radio being tuned, and we do hear coming through the radio that the doomsday clock is 1 minute till midnight. And then we get the title screen immediately, or we get a title screen that says that we are in Hoboken, 1985. Hoboken is a New Jersey town, right? It's a suburb of New York.
It's all in that area. Yeah, it's all in that area.
New York City, that is. And someone we come to learn very quickly is young Wade Tillman. I'd say he's probably, 15, 16, getting off of a bus with a bunch of Jehovah's Witnesses. And he's being brought to a carnival where there's a lot of people, sinners, that are there. And they're there to, prophesize to them. Yeah. To all the carnival goers. So this was a good representation of Wade, huh? Good actor, this guy.
Yeah, and it makes sense. It wasn't something that I guess I would have even guessed as his former background with the whole devout right, alt-right Christian kind of group. Not alt-right, but just extreme side Christian group, but it makes complete sense for kind of how his outlook of things is, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So, the leader of this group hands Wade some Watchtower pamphlets. Those are real, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's told, I love this line, he's told it's 1 minute till midnight, tick-tock, Wade.
Yeah.
So Wade's got to hurry around being told to get those pamphlets circulated. And then this great song that I love from the 80s, Howard Jones, Things Can Only Get Better, plays as Wade starts to comb the crowd. And he eventually meets a girl, says she wants to learn more, takes him into a funhouse full of mirrors. I kind of yada yada'd over the group of thugs that he meets when the girl, you know, runs off with him. But what did you think here when this was happening?
The knot tops. Yeah, I like that. Because
there's a callback to the comics, right?
Yeah, callback to the comic. And it when later on we get the reference to Pale Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, that's like the groups, that's who they follow, you know, they're like Deadheads for the Pale Horse group, which is this right. like heavy metal band or something like that. And they're supposed to be playing at Madison Square Garden this night.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just wondering why these losers didn't get tickets to go to the show. Instead, they're hanging out at the Hoboken State Fair.
Well, you know, maybe they couldn't afford the tickets now.
I guess not.
Anyway, I love this when they go into this fun house of mirrors. This, you know, anytime in any movie that's ever done a room of mirrors, it's always cool. But this might be, or movie, TV show, what have you, this might be the coolest I've ever seen it. There's just great visuals. Great. Mm-hmm. I didn't check to see who the director is. My apologies on the show. But it was really cool. And anyway, Careless Whisper strikes up. This is a Wham song, another great 80s song. And actually, Careless Whisper is a theme throughout mm-hmm. this episode, which was very cool. So this made me a little uncomfortable because these kids are clearly young. But she starts to undress him and starts, of course, insinuating that they're about to have sex and gets him completely naked. And then takes all of his clothes and runs off and says, fuck you, Bible boy, and runs out to her friends screaming that she's got the Okie's clothes. And that's when, that very moment, when the squid attack of New York happens, the psychic squid attack. And I love that we're seeing this attack through Wade's POV.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I was screaming, this is it. This is the squid attack. Yeah. It's happening. We're going to see it because, of course, they didn't do this in the movie.
Right.
And I believe that Watchmen purists, their main criticism of the movie is that the squid attack was changed for the end of the movie. Correct? Isn't that the biggest right?
It's my husband's favorite. Think right off the bat it is for sure. I think there was other things that they got wrong, but that the fact that they just changed the whole ending and the whole reason was always that they just didn't think it would play on a movie screen. Like, well, how do you show a giant monstrous squid? Like that, it's almost like, well, that's too stupid. That doesn't make sense.
Right. And also that it's a psychic attack. So yeah. We're seeing it through Wade's POV. And there's this ringing in his ears. Mm-hmm. Everything's blurred vision. And it's enhanced by the fact that he's in this room of mirrors. So it's very trippy and psychedelic. And you can tell his senses are being messed with.
Right.
This is like a sonic attack.
It's, right.
It was cool. It was very cool the way they did it. It's traumatizing. Mm-hmm. You know, you could certainly understand Wade's trauma from that very moment on. You can right. definitely understand why he is the way he is. But anyway, again, we get this another rendition of Careless Whisper, this time as he's waking up. It's all slowed down like mm-hmm. it's melted. That was cool. Yeah. He walks out of the funhouse, sees mostly people are dead. There's a few people alive, but mostly just hundreds of dead bodies, thousands mm-hmm. of dead bodies perhaps on the ground. And he starts to just scream, what happened, what happened, what happened? And we pan out across the river into downtown New York City and actually see the squid.
Yeah, it looked good. It was disgusting
incredible.
Looking. It was monstrous looking. It showed that they could do it. You know, like they.
Yeah.
Lindelof basically said, no, we can put this on the screen. We're putting it on the screen. So it was awesome that they did that. I loved the first face he really sees is the girl who stole his clothes down on the, you know, the mm-hmm. bottom of the steps with her blood just pouring out of her ears and eyes and nose and everything. So I think we realize that, you know, obviously he doesn't die, and with some later things, I think the insinuation's kind of there too, but I guess we're led to believe that because he was in that Hall of Mirrors, he might have had a little bit of a protection. Somehow those mirrors might have actually been almost, guarding some of the waves from him or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think that definitely saved his life. Of course, he doesn't see it that way. It definitely has guarded him against having a healthy relationship. So
for sure.
Get to that. Anyway, we cut to present time, and it's a commercial that's being tested, and it's a campaign for Come Back to New York. And it's an advertisement, and it's people trying to entice people to either move to New York or work in New York and all the benefits of coming to New York, including Michael Imperioli, who's a.k.a. Christopher from The Sopranos, doing a bit about he likes his squid with lemon and a little marinara. And then we see Wade's watching this commercial from behind a glass, and it's, a testing room or something. Yeah, focus group. Thank you. And the title screen, Fear of Lightning, is on the glass backwards because it's facing the other room on the other side. I thought that was a neat touch. And LG tells the commercial producers that the focus group despised the commercial. He says, sorry, folks, all your ad does is remind people that 3 million people suffered a horrible, traumatizing, and inexplicable death, and they are not moving to New York. And then he says that he suspects the calamari didn't help.
Yeah, his delivery here is great. He said, no, I think people are ready to move on. Well, my professional opinion, they're not moving on to New York.
Yes. Love it. So next we see he's driving into a garage, and I have this in my notes because I have to shout out the very prominent car that he drives is a Toyota Yaris, which I have to say is the exact same car down to the color and everything of the car I have.
Nice.
So even when Sean was watching it with me, and he calls my car the Easter egg.
Yeah.
So as soon as that scene popped out, he goes, oh, he drives an Easter egg too.
Nice.
And I said, I can't even tell you how thrilled I was to see it. Now, mine's not electrically powered, but it's a great little car, actually. So that was cool. So, yeah, I'm one degree of separation, I guess, from looking at that. There you go. So anyway, he comes back out of the garage in his looking glass disguise. We hear a voiceover from Lori about how all the cops have gathered up their usual suspects, beat the shit out of them, stuck them in Mirror Guy's interrogation pod, and still have nothing to show for it. And we cut to Lori speaking from the very same podium that Judd spoke from in episode 1, and all the cops are, in assembly. And she continues saying, we don't know who they are, but we know where they are. And she points to the picture from the video that they sent over in the first episode, and it does show that they're in a church. So she tells them, how many churches in the whatever mile radius, 3,000 to 5,000, whatever. She says, go scour the churches, go get your religion on, find that church. And so first Lori sighting, it was great. First Mirror Guy reference, we'll come back to that. I did love that. Then we cut to this little funny bit where Red Scare is talking to Panda. Yay, Panda's back. Panda gets a couple cameos in this episode. And he's asking about different kinds of churches. LG walks through and they ask his opinion. And he notices that Red Scare is eating lettuce on his sandwich that came from the evidence bag. And he's clearly annoyed about it, but Red Scare is indifferent. And it was a funny bit. Funny reminder about the lettuce, which is going to be significant.
Yeah, it was a good way to kind of just slip that in so it's on your mind moving forward.
Good writing there, Lindelof. Smart, smart man. Sister Knight pulls him aside and they speak at his desk. That's significant. She asks about the pills. He says he hasn't heard anything yet, and she suggests that he calls his ex. And I love his delivery again about how when somebody's doing you a favor, you don't lean on them. And then Lori walks out of the office and yells, "Hey, mirror guy, got a minute?"
Yeah.
So there's our mirror guy reference number two. I started laughing my ass off right then and there every time she addresses him as mirror guy. It's very funny.
Yeah, I feel bad for Wade, like, already in this episode. I mean, obviously, we just saw what happened to him, but the fact that she just treats him with such...
lack of compassion.
Yeah, but she's doing it purposefully, you know? It's not that... she may actually not actually feel that way, but she knows what she's going to try to get him to do anyway, and she's just... such a dick to him to try to kind of break him down. Like, she really wants to get under his skin.
She's cold and heartless, though, Dean. I mean, she's not a nice lady.
Yeah, but I think she's already seen that she still can't do that with Angela. You know, she thought she was doing the same thing with Angela, and then Angela basically told her, like, "You don't scare me." Yeah. But, you know, she got to Wade that very first time that they met, when she got him to, even though she already knew, but got him to admit that Sister Knight was Angela. So she already knows that he is vulnerable.
Mm. And she takes advantage of that vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's pretty horrible to him here in the office. So inside her office, she does first immediately kind of just dress him down, saying, "You can take off your mask. I know what you look like." She's looking through his file, his personal file, and learns that he was in New York, or actually, he corrects her, New Jersey, but close enough. But on 11-2, so that's the name, the reference to this inciting incident, this 11-2. She says she's heard that people who were in the psychic blast zone still wake up screaming in the middle of the night, and he says he sleeps great. And she then concludes that also when... Oh, no, then she also says he joined the police force right after the White Knight. And once they let you yahoos start putting on masks, you had an excuse to wrap your entire head in reflectatine, which we then learn is what composes his mask and also is a product, I guess, that was invented or designed probably by Lady True to protect people from psychic blasts.
Yeah, we definitely see the reflectatine a lot here in a little bit. I'll go ahead. This is a good time to go ahead and bring in one of the PDPedia files from this week. So there were three PDPedia files dropped this week, and one of them is a pamphlet for extra-dimensional anxiety in you. And we actually see this pamphlet later in the episode.
With the cat on the cover?
Yes. Yeah. But it's pretty interesting as far as it gives you the symptoms of extra-dimensional anxiety. There's common misperceptions such as EDA isn't real, EDA isn't common, and EDA isn't as serious as it used to be, but it is. You know, and there's all sorts of counseling and psychotherapy things, but it does talk about how people have these flashbacks and obsessive rumination, paranoia, thrill-seeking, hyper-avoidance, hyper-vigilance. So all these hit on Wade, for sure, as we see. And it does talk about how people who were close, who were actually in the vicinity, did tend to have, like, you know, continual psychic flashbacks or visions. So who knows how much he has been affected since he was so close to the event.
Like PTSD.
But it will be even more so because, I guess, since it's like a psychic thing, those that survived in the vicinity, like that he actually experienced it, you know, like some of it's actually still stuck in his head. Like, so it's not even necessarily just psychological. It's there's a, you know, his brain was affected. And so he might still have remnants of that.
And we even get that Veidt kind of knew that would happen, because he even says it in the video later, how it kills millions but traumatizes millions more. And then we even get, well, we're jumping way ahead, but then we even get the hereditary trauma or genetic trauma or whatever. So it just continues even past, even as, anyway. Yeah. So continuing, Lori continues to read Wade's file and says, "Oh, you do market research, so that's your cover. You watch a bunch of idiots to see what they think of the new flavor of Pringles, and no one knows that you're secretly Mirror Guy." And at this point, he's annoyed as shit. And
I love his look. Yeah, the look he gives is just, he's, because it's at this point, it's like he knows she's just trying to needle him, but he just gets so frustrated.
Yeah. So he says, you know, it's Looking Glass. And she says, yeah, but, you know, you can have Mirror Guy if you want. And finally, as he's about to leave, she says, oh, yeah, what pills? And then she quickly explains that she bugged his cactus on his desk, and Sister Knight was just asking him, or actually she says, Angela, oh, excuse me, Sister Knight was just asking about some pills. And he does say that's a personal issue between Angela and me and would be a violation of her medical privacy if I divulged it. May I go? And she says, you surely may, Mirror Guy. So possible. I mean, I know there were some great moments in this episode, but again, that because it had Jean Smart might have been my favorite episode of the whole, our favorite scene of the whole episode. It was so funny and good.
Yeah, she is on point this whole. Like we talked about that a couple weeks ago, how in Legion, you know, Jean Smart a lot of times, especially in the last season and a half, just she's kind of relegated to the background, and when she was there, she didn't, you know, there was so much of her points throughout season three where it was like, why is she even still in the show? And they just didn't, I you know, if you only had saw her in that, you'd have no idea she was capable of this performance, just how different she is as a character.
You didn't watch season two of Fargo, correct?
No, I did. I'm just saying, yeah. If you hadn't watched, if you only have seen her in Legion and you didn't know her from a lot of other things, you wouldn't see this range from her.
If you didn't know her from Designing Women.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
She was really good in, too, by the way.
She's no Delta Burke, but.
Seriously, though, if for anybody wanting more Jean Smart, go watch season two of Fargo. You don't have to watch any other Fargo. I mean, I would recommend watching all of it, of course, but season two was really good with her. And also, what's her face, too? The girl who played Sid, Rachel Keller, is in that, too. Anyway, we digress. So next we see just what I'm calling just a completely sad sight. Just Wade's home life is super sad. His life really sucks. We see that he gets home, takes off his baseball cap, and we see that it is lined with Reflectatine. And then he even puts his full mask on at home, his full LG mask, even while he's eating dinner and watching TV. And speaking of, his dinner is just a can of baked beans. And on TV, all right, I guess I should be careful what I ask for. On TV, we get a brief glimpse of another episode of American Hero Story. Not the scene I necessarily wanted, but hey, it's the scene we got. It is Hooded Justice having sex with, is that Captain Metropolis?
Yeah, I think that's who it is.
So, implying there was something there between these two Minutemen, clearly. Wade seems mildly interested, and first I thought, They've talked about his ex, but they've never, well, I guess we did see the envelopes with her name, Cynthia. But at first I thought, well, I wonder if he's gay.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. Just, you know, curious.
No, I did think it was interesting that they have kind of, or I guess just people in general, because the more you think about it, the big connection, obviously the fact that he wears a mask, everyone kind of connects him as, oh, he's this Watchman's Rorschach. And he also, now that we're kind of seeing the paranoia part of him, still kind of connects to that. But then, and then they have that him eating the can of baked beans, which you see Rorschach do at some point, just the same way, pulls his mask up and eats straight out of the can.
And Rorschach was homophobic.
Well, that's the thing. Like right then, it does show a huge difference in the fact that, yeah, like Rorschach did have, like when you really look back at his all his writings and the way he bitched about the city and stuff, he was very, you know, kind of back then style alt-right thinking, where he was very homophobic, hated the change that people were bringing, you know, that the liberals were bringing in and stuff like that. Whereas Wade, obviously, nonplussed or, you know, just able to sit there and watch that. I think that Rorschach would have been disgusted to see something like that on television.
Yeah, good point. And Dean, is there anything sadder than just a uncooked can of baked beans straight out of the can for dinner? I mean, that's pretty bad.
The only thing worse is the uncooked baked beans out of the can while sitting in front of borderline, you know, gay porn on television, I suppose. I don't know. Not what I'd want to be watching while I'm eating those beans, but hey, to each their own.
The two probably don't go together very well.
No, I don't think I'd want to watch, not even the gay part, just I don't want to watch people have sex while I'm eating beans out of a can. Yeah.
All right. Then all of a sudden an alarm starts going off, and we quickly learn that this is a drill Wade is running. And so he's very quickly reacting, running from his house into his bunker, gets into his bunker, and hits the button, starts to record his time on a chart where we see there are lots of other entries, and the alarm starts to go off again. So we know it's malfunctioning. He has to run back into his house, find the mainframe unit in his closet, and, you know, rip that out of the wall and destroy it in great fashion. I think we've all dealt with an electronic something that wouldn't stop going off at some time or another. And have reacted very similarly. I know I have with a smoke detector.
I was just about to say I've ripped several smoke detectors right off the ceiling.
We did one just like a few months ago. So when Sean and I were watching it, he's like, "Hey, that's like us just a few months ago."
Yeah.
With that fucking thing, I was like, "I know." I mean, we had to get we had to cut some wires and all kinds of shit to get that shit to stop.
Yeah, mine's connected to my alarm system, and if I forget to like put the alarm into like test mode, as soon as I unplug it, it just sets the whole house alarm off too. So it's awful.
There's got to be a better way. There's just got to be a better way. Anyway, so Wade reacted much like we would expect it to. I did find it curious. When he was stomping it on the ground, it reminded me of when Veidt was stomping, when he was getting so mad at the Phillips who froze out in space and was stomping on him.
Yes.
So I thought that was a great parallel. Anyway, next we see he's on the phone with this alarm company, and he's fighting with customer service, saying that your machine's malfunctioning. I performed over 500 drills on this unit. To which the customer service rep pretty much implies that he's overused it. That's the reason it's malfunctioning. But nonetheless, Wade orders another one and demands that it be overnighted, even though the cost of the expedited shipping is the same as the unit itself. Wade doesn't care. He's clearly an extreme prepper. And I also love the nice touch. This company is called the Extra Dimensional Security, or the EDS. So this is an EDS unit.
Yeah, and you got to assume that this is just, like, a bullshit product, right? Like, this is just a company that's come around, that, like, to take advantage of people's fears, like...
And probably the Reflectatine is as well, right?
Yeah, and so it's just, they're more than willing to sell them a whole new unit, charge them more for expedited shipping, all this stuff, and then if there really was another attack, even if the alarm did warn you, would you be able to do anything? If he went down in his bunker and wrapped himself in Reflectatine, would that even do anything?
Right. And also what we learn here is that his mask, and I don't really know that this was fully established before this episode, but his mask has zero, doesn't contribute to his ability, to his quote unquote power at all.
Right.
He just wears it. That's the mask he's chosen. But because we can see that he's in his job, he can tell if people are telling the truth, and he's obviously not wearing his mask there, his quote unquote day job.
Right.
And then later on with the woman in the bar. So that's interesting that we really get the full view of his extreme prepper, right?
Yeah, and we see as he goes home, and he immediately puts the whole mask on, even though there's really no need for him to have it on. We see him later go to bed wearing the mask, you know? Like, I mean, it's a crutch for him.
So you were probably just a kid when Y2K crap was going on. I would say that's the biggest, like, prepper time in my lifetime that I can remember. Were you?
I was in high school, and So I remember it being like a thing.
Remember, everybody was buying generators and stocking up on water.
Yeah,
I thought that nothing's going to happen. They're ready for this. They've been talking about Y2K for 10 years in the 90s. Like, soon as computers came out and they realized, you know, as soon as everything was kind of up and running, that's when they were like, oh, shit. So they were fixing it. It was absolutely nothing happened. And that's what was so fucking stupid and made me realize that preppers are dumb.
Yeah. Again, if the bomb hits or whatever and you have your bunker, sure, great. Sure. Maybe you survive the bomb, but then you have to live in radioactive wasteland for the rest. Like, you're fucked anyway at that point.
No. Who cares? But same with a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, right? Like, might as well just go out early and not have to deal with that life.
For sure, because it all looks like shit. All right. We cut back to a scene. This was a quick scene back at the market research facility. This time it's a box of cereal called Smiley-O's. It was a great Watchmen callback there. The cereal box had the big yellow smiley face that was, reminiscent of the Watchmen logo or icon. And the little girl saying, the cereal tastes like nothing. So great. Anyway, that's when Wade gets the page that the pills are ready. And we cut to what I'm calling probably the most horrific place we've seen yet on this show. This really distressed me, and it's distressing me even more thinking that this scene alone may make Steph.
I thought this too.
Her bail on this show completely.
Yep.
I did not like it at all, but it definitely gave some insight to what is for sure happening with Lady True and the crooks and the Phillips and Crookshanks of it all. You know, here we go. Here's a facility. It is a animal cloning or a pet cloning facility. It's staffed by all identical twins. That was a nice touch.
Or identical clones. We don't even know.
Exactly. Do you think that it was, I have a note here, do you think it was leading us to believe that there was some people cloning going on there as well? I would say most likely.
Yeah.
And Cynthia is a lab tech there, and she's making a dog when Wade walks in to get the pills. And she asks if the dog looks identical to the ones that are in a, I don't know if it's a hologram or a person standing there holding them or whatever, but you know, she says naked eye, what do you think? And this is awful because this little puppy is horrible. Oh my God, I can't even hardly go on. So he compares and says, well, the one you're making is a little smaller. And she says, ah, too bad. Asks him if he wants a dog. He says, what the hell would I want with a dog? And then she immediately puts the poor little dog in an incinerator.
Oh, I just thought it was like a shoot. Maybe it went down to send the dog to a farm where it gets to play for the rest of its life.
No.
Isn't that where dogs go when they're not wanted? To the farm?
No, all dogs go to heaven.
Oh, that's right. Of course. No. Of course, in this world, what is heaven? And maybe ends up in Mars.
If you watch it with your subtitles on, it even says hissing sound. It's very bad. It's awful. Fortunately, we don't get the dog squealing and yelping, which would have just killed it.
I thought it would. Well, I kind of was... I thought it would have been funny if there was just a quick zap and I just heard just a very just quick, you know, just very subtle.
And what's even worse is that they're so indifferent to it.
Oh, yeah.
Both of them. Just like, meh. It's awful.
Well, you talked about this last week with Vite pulling the babies and just tossing the ones back he didn't like. And, you know, you made the comment that this could be a very subtle commentary on how some people look at like unwanted children in our world or the fact that, you know, sometimes things just aren't needed. So you just toss it out. You don't worry about it. So definitely get another little hint of that here.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Anyway, then Cynthia gives them the pills and says they are nostalgia. And we also learn through their conversation that nostalgia pills are contraband. They cause psychosis. So they also continue to talk. She, you know, she kind of assumes that he got these pills from a lady, and she kind of puts him down for his choices of women, you know, over the years. And he's like, well, I chose you. You're a good woman. And she says, yeah, well, for 7 years, you know, I still couldn't get you to stop wearing stop the paranoia or whatever. So it's just through that little bit of conversation, we do learn that they had been together for quite a while, and she couldn't fix him, couldn't get him to stop, to learn that she wasn't going to run out and leave him naked, you know, run out right. with his clothes or whatever. So again, contributing to the sad state of his life, here's a woman he's clearly still in love with who is clearly done with him.
Yeah, but you can tell she still cares about him. And, you know, and it sounds like she had to leave him almost because she just couldn't deal with his extreme yeah. paranoia with the squids and stuff. But she's obviously doing this favor for him. She's talking to him without disdain in her voice. Mm-hmm. She sounds almost disappointed when she talks about why they weren't still together. You know, like you can almost feel like sadness in her voice that she wishes she could have helped him, but that he would never let her help him.
And, you know, and I should have said, even when he, back before this happened, when he was going, when his alarm system malfunctioned and he ended up sleeping in his bunker that night, even more sad, he slept with his mask fully on mm-hmm. and had thoughts of her, you know, right. sleeping in that bunker with him. So it was clear that she participated as much as she really could, but just, yeah, couldn't take it anymore because right. he's hardcore, right?
Yeah. So they do tell us just a little bit about the nostalgia, and that'll Ooh. Come back, of course, later. There is a PDPedia file that is a drug ad for nostalgia.
Nice.
It specifically is dated for 2007, and so we know that we're now 2019, so apparently this was a legal drug, but then I guess it had so many issues they must have banned it. Mm-hmm. The way the ad is pulled out, it looks like something you'd see on, you know, there's like two old people like dancing like in their living room. So then they're like big smiles on their face, you know, and it mm-hmm. says, let your best yesterday lead you to a better tomorrow. So it tells us what nostalgia does. Apparently it lets people relive, not just the memory, but you feel the emotions of that memory. So you actually like it gives you more of like the feelings that you had from good memories.
Mm-hmm.
It's customized for each individual person, so you would have to go into the doctor's office and they would do some kind of procedure to actually get these memories from you. And like, so you pick the memories you want to think about and they'd specifically put them in there so you could feel those feelings again. Mm. And that's why it's so important, and it says this several times, that no one should take other people's nostalgia.
Are the pills one and done? You know, does it explain? Sorry, you might have more on this, but I have so many questions about these pills, and I love that they've given this explanation to them. So, is it each pill represents a different memory, or is it a bottle of pills that have all your memories in one pill, so that you can do it over and over and over again?
It says nostalgia floods the patient with the emotions and sensations encoded within the chosen memory. So I'm guessing your pills are based off of specific memories.
So if you've got a whole bottle of them, you don't know what memory you're getting?
So I don't know if maybe they're all, well, maybe they're all based off the same memory. Maybe not. I don't know. But yeah, it definitely says there's a lot of, as with all drugs like this, there's a lot of terrible side effects.
Of course.
You know, including some of
diarrhea.
I was about to say, including some of your usual
suicidal
like,
thoughts.
Kidney complete collapse of the autoimmune system. Here's some good ones: explosive flatulence or diarrhea, random or irregular erections, or random or irregular orgasms.
All right.
Severe anal leakage.
Nice.
And then, of course, fever, chills, nausea, insomnia, sleepwalking.
Don't eat beans while taking this medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. So it gives us psychic looping, incessant weeping, laughing, or screaming. So it definitely gives us some hints of what we might be seeing next episode. So I'm calling it here, putting this theory down, even though we're not there yet. We're going to see Sister Night shit her pants next week.
I hope not, but she's maybe not literally, but figuratively, right? Or the new literally.
Maybe both.
Yeah. Oof. All right. Back to the show. That's awesome. I love those PDPD files. So that was the second one. You said there were three entries.
Yeah, the other one, I should have brought the one in earlier because it had to do with this episode of American Hero Story.
Ooh, do it now.
Yeah, it was another PD review of this episode. it gives you a little bit more backstory on the Minutemen based off what he knows about them. It talks about how there were rumors or insinuations from Hollis Mason and from some other people that Hooded Justice may have been gay. He apparently had Hooded Justice and the original Silk Spectre, Jean Smart's mom, mm-hmm. Had a relationship, but it was like a fake relationship. Like it was just there for publicity type of thing. And they never actually like touched each other. There was no physical actual relationship. But again, it's more of PDpedia talking about how much he hates this show and how garbage it is and how inaccurate it is. And he makes sure to say that that's why he cares so much. It's not because he has other feelings. He's a historian. And so this is,
yeah,
it's not accurate.
He hate watches it.
Yeah, but he does bring up, and every time he talks about one of these, and it hasn't been shown, he talked about it in the car, I think, the last episode, but I keep waiting for it to portray the rape or the sexual assault from the comedian on Jean Smart's mom.
I think we'll get that, don't you?
Yeah, I think for sure, because she had that comment last week about when she was telling Angela that all vigilantes, it comes from some kind of past trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen Angela's trauma with the White Knight. We've seen Looking Glass's trauma. I think she's going to be hit with her own. And even though I think readers or people should kind of know the backstory of her trauma too, with not having Dr. Manhattan, but possibly what happened with her mom. I think it'll come into play at some point. So nothing too new on here. But a lot, again, the PDpedia, especially the ones that he quote unquote writes, that Dale PD supposedly writes, they're very good for people. If you haven't read the material or if you haven't read it in a long time, or if you're halfway familiar with it, it makes a lot of good connections. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always like the most about these PDPD files, is they do a good job of, but if you want to dive into it more and weave into how it really connects with the old original source material, these do a good job of kind of sewing those things together.
Yeah, for sure. And all of the previous episode entries are all there.
Oh yeah. So yeah. They're all there. They just add a new file
section. Yeah. We have that link in the show notes. Yeah. So everybody can check it out.
Yeah. Definitely go find that.
Absolutely. You know, I should have said at the top of the episode too, to be sure to email us at miketvpodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts. And we'll say that again at the end.
Did Roby email us this week?
That I was like, dang it, I meant to say it at the beginning.
Did Roby email us this week?
Yes. Oh, we have a great email from Roby, so we'll get to that. All right. So later on, we are at a support meeting at a church. And Wade is leading this support group. This is where we see the extra dimensional anxiety and you flyers that he puts on the table. And there are the pamphlets rather. And people are sitting in a circle and they're sharing their 11-2 trauma. One man talks about how he learned about genetic trauma, meaning that you inherit your trauma from your parents. So even though he wasn't born until 10 years after, the fact that his mom was there during the psychic squid, you know, he still inherited her trauma from that. Then a woman comes in. I don't think we ever learned this woman's name, which kind of annoyed me.
No, I know it because I looked it up and they've given her name a character, but I don't know if they ever mention it in the show or not. It's
watched
Renee.
It three times. Couldn't catch her name.
Yeah, her name's Renee.
Renee. Okay, great. Well, so we'll call her Renee. I had just woman with long blonde hair.
I just kept referring to her as Trixie the Whore.
Yeah. Oh.
From Deadwood.
So, all right, Renee. So a woman, Renee, comes in. She, and I love the, I guess, like, the code word. Wade turns around and asks her, are you a friend of Nemo's? And she says yes, so I guess that's her admission.
And that's the second connection to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, because that's what the title's from.
Oh, right.
The Little Fear of Lightning.
Oh.
And because the quote is, the full quote's, if, well, the close to the full quote is like, if there were no thunder, there'd be little fear of lightning.
And that's from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Oh, yeah.
I did not, you know, I didn't do my research on the title. I just figured it was about Wade's paranoia.
I looked to make sure I was right, but then that's one of the first books I ever remember reading when I was a kid, because I had watched a movie when I was younger. Back then, Disney still had a ride that was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, so, like, I remember that. And so, yeah, I read that book in, like, fifth or sixth grade, and so it was one of my favorite books growing up. But, yeah, if there was no thunder, there'd be little fear of lightning, which I thought was a good portrayal of Wade's paranoia.
And of course,
it's almost, for
Captain
him, it's like
Nemo is the main character.
Yeah,
for those who haven't read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea,
Captain Nemo, who also fights a giant squid.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it gives a good kind of portrayal of Wade's paranoia, because if he, to him, it's like the reason he does all this is because if you didn't hear thunder, you wouldn't fear lightning, but lightning is what's dangerous. Mm-hmm. So if he's not fearing the squid showers or the signs of the squid, people will forget that the squid could actually happen, because you can tell for him especially, he is legitimately concerned that this giant squid is going to come back, or another giant squid is going to come back. And some of these other people, I think they're trauma, like the guy who's like hereditarily touched by it. That sounded like such a 2019 like kind of loop you'd have now, which I think was in there intentionally, because you do kind of have that idea of
wink and a nod to
my ancestors were, you know, treated badly by other people, and so 100 years later I'm still feeling that. And so I think that was kind of a way to show that without talking about specifically, you know, whether it's race or something else like that.
I think that's a really good point. So Renee sits down, and the guy who was talking, the one who got the, the genetic trauma, continues by saying he doesn't want to end up like a nutter with his head wrapped in tinfoil, which I thought was funny. Wade begins to offer advice to the people about how they can just how they're able to move past it and move out of the tunnel and into the light. And then he has everybody join hands and say their mantra. And their mantra is as such: we know there are other dimensions than this one, but this is the dimension where we live, and we will not live in fear. So, pretty good mantra there. And then as they're leaving, the woman, Renee, speaks to him out in the parking lot and gets him to follow her to a bar. Another great shot of his Toyota Yaris. At the bar, they are flirting and drinking, and she learns that Wade can tell when people are lying and telling the truth, and then he wants to know her squid story, so she says it's stupid, and he'll laugh because his trauma is so real, and hers is just about a movie, you know, that movie Pale Horse. He doesn't know about it. She says Spielberg did it in 92. It won a bazillion Oscars. It was called Pale Horse after the band that was playing at Madison Square Garden on the night of 11/2. It's a black and white movie, so at the end there's this scene with a girl in a red coat, and the red really pops, and she's walking around all the dead bodies, and she's scared, and she's calling out for her mom, and that scene just really struck with Renee. So this is, of course, supposed to be Watchmen Alternate Universes' Schindler's List.
Right. Yeah.
Pretty cool how they did that there.
I also thought it was interesting that she's, you know, obviously because it's talking about that concept from Schindler's List with the red coat, but that what stuck with her is this girl walking through the dead bodies, and that's what she fears because of that. But then Wade literally lived that moment, walking through the dead bodies, wondering what the hell's going on, you know, not necessarily calling for his mom, but like, you know, calling for anybody at that point.
Since we know this meeting was orchestrated and that they were specifically targeting Wade, do you think she knew this about his backstory going in and that's why she was using that? I mean, seems like he would have been able to tell if she was telling the truth there or not. So maybe she really is very fucked up over that movie and that's why she had to use it.
Yeah, I think they I don't know if they know his full backstory, but
it's pretty good coincidence.
They do make some comments later on that they knew that he had the reflecting in his hat. Like, so they, I think they know enough about him, and we're starting to see more and more that if Lori knows things, other people know things too. And so if she knew all the things about him in the past,
yeah,
then other people knew about him.
It would stand to reason they would have direct access to the
That's what I mean.
When we
find out
what we're about to find out.
Right, okay, that's what I mean. Well, but I do think she might be still telling the truth because she does later on say to him, like, I really was a insurance adjuster, whatever the job she says she is. So
radiologist or something.
Yeah, yeah. So she does seem like she has some empathy for him or sympathy. And I think maybe she was traumatized by it, but obviously maybe until she learns the truth. So
I don't know.
We'll find out more.
I mean, could be a plot hole here, you know, like if she's clearly not traumatized over the squid attack. She knows the truth, right? They are all those Calvary people we would think know the truth. So, which what they're saying is the truth. I mean, that video is no lie because that's what we know from the source material is that the squid attack was fabricated by Vite. That's not a revelation to people who know the source material. Might be to show watchers only. That might have been a really cool and crazy reveal.
Right.
But
maybe, I don't know, because maybe if she did, but again, if she did have those feelings before she was told the truth, she could still be talking about that to where she could, you know, people beat lie detectors, right? We know that. And so he is only so good as his skill is, and skills can still be tricked. And you know, he is kind of right now seemingly infatuated with this woman at a bar drinking. And he may not have been looking for it necessarily, because it almost seems like later on when he tells her about this and she starts, well, let me say some things and see if you can tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, well, okay, now he's turning the skill on. Now he's like looking for this specific thing that she's saying.
Good point. Yeah. So pretty crafty, Renee. Very crafty. And even gets craftier when she says she's drunk. She's going to call a friend to pick her up. Real sad moment when she's walking off saying that he should call a friend also. And she's out of earshot, but he does say, I don't have any friends.
Mm-hmm.
That was really sad. Outside, she's waiting for her ride. They share a kiss, and then a pickup truck pulls up. She gets in it, and they pull off, but not before a head of lettuce falls out, which prompts Wade to get into his car and follow them.
Yeah, we also learn that just, you know, not anything important, but she's smoking the cigarette, in which claims or, you know, makes their comment, like, how do you have that? It's a controlled substance now.
Yeah.
So, tobacco, I guess. So this will be the scene where Tim Andrews nopes out. So we already lost Steph with the incinerated dog. Now we're losing Tim because tobacco is illegal. Next, we're going to find out there was never a Pudgy's Pizza, and then Jeff's going to be gone too.
And the sad thing is that they'll never hear this. All right. We see the truck pulls up into the back of an abandoned shopping center. We don't really know it's abandoned, but we learn that quickly enough. And he sees them emerge. LG's watching from a distance. He sees them emerge from the truck. They have cavalry masks on. Finally, he calls for backup. Of course, he stupidly doesn't wait for the backup. He runs in after them, but first he searches the pickup truck and finds a gun, which he takes. Then he enters the shopping center all stealthily, and he's looking around. And this is where we start to hear the audience hears that TikTok sound over the music. We know it's coming. I just love that touch that they're doing.
Yeah, and I think they intentionally set this up, like, again, Lindelof is doing a good job this season of not doing this crap that a lot of people try to do nowadays, where it's like, what, at the very last minute, we're going to swerve your expectations. There are some things where it's like, is it so obvious? Like, it's so obvious this is a trap. So obvious this is a trap. And then, but I think it's like, yeah, it is a trap. It's obvious, right? And everyone except him knows it. And why all of a sudden he just like blindly going in here. And yeah. I think he was so thrown off all of a sudden by her having some connection to these people that he just is, he's going on like full cop instinct right now, you know? And so he is just kind of running into the thing, which is stupid, but
I mean, he knows these people have an arsenal of weapons. He knows what, he wasn't there. I don't think, no, he wasn't there, but he knows what Angela and Judd and Red Scare went through out there on with the cows, you know, when they went to the cow farm or whatever. So what is he thinking? Yeah, this was a dumb, terrible rookie mistake.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
So as he's scoping out the area, he does enter a big room that is made to look up like a church, and there's cameras all around it. And just in case audience isn't clear on it, we even get a quick flashback of his inner thoughts. As he's realizing this is the same church that's in the video that the Calvary sent the police department. And just then, a basketball falls from a portal in the ceiling. And as a Calvary person comes in to retrieve it, Wade follows him and finally encounters a room of a bunch of Calvary doing an experiment through a portal. And he cocks his gun and tells them to turn the portal off. The woman, Renee, tells them they went through a lot of trouble to bring him in, and when he starts to fire the gun at them, he learns, as well as we do, that it's full of blanks, and then she also tells him that they also intercepted his call for backup. So that's when they grab him up and say the only way is to show him the truth. And what do you want to say anything about this portal before we move into this room they take him to?
I thought it was cool. The way they did it was cool. In fact, when the basketball just zaps out of nowhere, immediately it was like, oh, shit, we're going somewhere new. Like, you know, this wasn't, I don't think, what anyone was expecting from the 7th Cavalry. And so we're seeing this new side of what might be their purpose or what their plan is. And
it really messes Wade up. Like,
well, and then even Wade, even Wade, I think completely misreads the situation because he's thinking they're going to try to like drop another squid, but I was more thinking, no, they're probably going to use this so they can all jump in and go somewhere to either attack something or they're trying to escape somewhere or do something. But
yeah, they're measuring where the basketballs come out, which makes me think this portal doesn't have a very strong range because the basketballs are all just dropping around there in that mall.
Right. So right now it might have been, you know, maybe they just got this thing working. And so, they're just testing out the logistics of it. I kept wanting someone to jump through it to see what would happen.
Well, they sit him in a room that has a whole wall of TV screens. Oh, you know something big's coming when you're in front of a wall of TV screens. So you just, you know, that's just a good life hack, people. and a man in a Calvary mask sits down and starts talking to him. And, of course, Wade immediately knows, as do the audience, that this is Senator Keene speaking to him. And Wade says, you're not even going to try to disguise your voice. And Keene immediately takes off the mask. Gives a little bit of, I guess we got an answer here, right? He, Wade immediately thinks that Keene's going to kill him because he's a cop killer, because surely he was in charge of the White Knight. And Keene says, wait, I'm no cop killer. I stepped in after the White Knight to keep these yokels in line. And Judd did the same. We had a pact. He's keeping the police in line. I'm keeping these rednecks in line. So, interesting development there.
Yeah, now, again, the way he says that, do you think that, so does that mean, do you think that the 7th Cavalry knows that he's Keene?
No, I don't.
So, because it sounds like he infiltrated to make sure they're not doing this stuff again.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the higher-ups know, but I bet you a lot of them don't.
Right, and so it doesn't sound like, again, if you don't think about it, you might be, oh, well, he's part of it. But he doesn't sound like he's necessarily racist, because he even makes, like, the comment. He kind of insults them by calling them racist yokels, mm-hmm. or he's racist Okies, he says later on. It's just like you said, he's there to kind of make sure that now he's using them, obviously, for some other purpose, but he wasn't necessarily involved with the White Knight. Now, again, does he say that Judd was also a member of the 7th K, or is that, like you said, he's taking charge of the police side, so it's almost like we're controlling both sides now?
Right. It was a pact that they had to control both sides. He doesn't really specify that Judd was part of the 7K or whatever. This is kind of a running line here too, because Judd says, asks Wade Wade asks Judd if that's true, and Keen asks Wade, is anything true?
Yeah.
And that line is kind of reverberated through the rest of the episode. This whole questioning, is anything true? Which is, since that's Wade's foundational skill set of being able to assess the truth from what's not true, for him to kind of be saying this line now from here on out, is anything true, just really shows the level of depth he has sunk to.
Yeah, and we're starting to finally get this theme again from the original Watchmen, of the sense of it's really all about a few people making these decisions for the rest of the world, and kind of behind the scenes, you know, puppeteering these events and make, you know, whether it's for the good of everyone or not, it's there. We really see all this misinformation, whether it's from the government or whether it's from corporations like Bytes and stuff like that. And so we're now starting to see this, that the government is actually behind some of these possible false flags and other things. And they're doing so much behind the scenes thing. And again, is anything even true? Like, can you believe anything that has happened, or is it just always someone else doing it the way they need it to do? And then they tell you the story about why it happened, and we believe it because it's, oh, they're official. So
more commentary on the news and the internet, and, you know, just like, don't believe everything you read, people.
Fake news.
It's out there. It is out there for sure. Anyway, then Wade asks what the portal is for, and suspects that they're planning to do another squid drop on Tulsa, and Keen says no, they're planning something new, and doesn't go into it, so I'm sure that is something we need to remember, because we're going to learn what that something new is. So, question answered, new question posed.
Right.
And then he says, I'm going to show you something that's going to set you free, and in return, I need you to do me a favor. Call it a squid pro quo.
And then if the last two episodes are just going to be an impeachment trial of Keen to see if there was squid quo pro or not.
Yes, and it'll be riveting. He says, I know Angela Abar either was involved in Judd's murder or knows who did it, so I need you to get her to back off for just a few days so we can complete what we're trying to do here. Otherwise, we're going to be forced to move in, and I'll just have those Okey rednecks just move in and kill her and her entire family. Either way, doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, this whole little part told me a lot without telling me a lot, because it immediately I was thinking, well, if he's in on it, again, he's the one that sent Lori down there, so is she in on it? But then right off the bat, you can tell that the way he talks doesn't sound like it, because he's like, I know Blake already suspects Angela, so mm-hmm. let's go ahead and push that along so we can get her off the board. I like how you use that phrase, get her off the board, as it's just a big game.
Yeah, you know? And he's indifferent as to whether she lives or dies, and, you know, I do like... This is something that's critical for everyone to remember, that when Wade does what he does at the end, he thinks he's protecting Angela.
Yeah.
He's not betraying her, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, for sure.
I heard chatter out there of like, God, Wade really turned on her fast, didn't he? And it's like, no, he thinks he's protecting her.
Yeah, it's either that or... he knows it in his mind, if she gets arrested, eventually she's not going to get like... found guilty for anything, but if he doesn't, then potentially She's going to have White Knight part 2.
Covered up a crime scene now.
Well,
she's
kind of deep.
And that letter got burned. You know, the note.
That's true.
Burned.
That letter, yeah.
It's her only proof. She swallowed the pill. Okay, right. Wait. So, anyway, then the moment of the moment of truth, folks. He puts the video, which comes on all the wall of TV screens. Great, great scene here. It's Adrian Veidt speaking to President Robert Redford, explaining how Redford is seeing this video now on the day of his inauguration in 1993. But Veidt actually made the video from 1985. So he's explaining, how could I so accurately predict your inauguration with such accuracy? It is because, indeed, I planned it. I didn't predict it. I planned it. And this whole squid attack was a hoax, also fabricated by him to prevent the nuclear war that was brewing between Russia and the United States. In order for it to fully work, however, there has to be continued effort of small-scale extra-dimensional events that must continue in order to maintain the peace. And it will only work if the president becomes his partner in helping build this utopia. And for the next 3 hours, I'm going to give you an in-depth explanation of how that works, which we don't get, but I do think that's funny that they tacked that on. But it just in those few sentences, Wade is floored by this information. His whole life, his whole foundation of his life, this trauma that he has lived with, to learn it was all built on a lie. I just can't imagine what it would be like to deal with that.
Right. Yeah, because you even think of, like, if you had, and he doesn't necessarily seem to have this feeling, but if it was almost of, I was lucky to be spared, like, that must mean something for me. But no, you just happened to get lucky. Like, you literally just luckily survived. You should have died too, and it was all for nothing. So some kingmakers could pull the strings around the world to do what they felt was the right thing moving forward. Mm-hmm. You really see his whole life just shatter. And again, Tim Blake Nelson is just so good. I mean, you see it in his face, the way he looks at it, his eyes, he kind of just droops as it goes on. You see everything just leaving him.
This was a good week for television. You know, the same night this episode aired in real time, I realize, you know, people could be listening to this way into the future, but when this episode aired on real time is the same night that a very emotional and revealing Mr. Robot episode aired of the final season of Mr. Robot. It was episode 6 or 7, I believe, right in the middle of this season right now. And I won't spoil it, but it was more Emmy award winning performances over there on Robot, as well as what was going on here on Watchmen. And also on the same night was a very emotional and well-acted and well-done Walking Dead episode, too, where a very good character who has been suffering with PTSD, then how that played out in that episode, very emotionally and sad, with a big reveal, too, a kind of an audience, like, you know, something that nobody saw coming. So all three
he was
shows.
Really a zombie the whole time in disguise,
no,
right?
No. I'm not going to spoil it. But for people who've noped out on The Walking Dead, I'm going to continue to beat the drum that you really have to dip back in. It's really good this season. Honestly, the show is better without Rick and Carl on it. Really what's happened here. It's only gotten better. Anyway, I digress.
Before we move on, because now we're getting to my favorite really scene of the whole show, I think. This is, I think, my one biggest complaint so far of the show was I hated that they didn't make Veidt look young.
I think that their intention was to make him look young.
Yeah, but he's supposed to be, what, 35 years younger? Mm-hmm. He looked and he sounded old still. I wish they would have gotten a younger person to play this character.
Could we go on this assumption, though, that wherever this place has been, that he's been in, of course, I guess it's only been 4 years, but wherever he's been imprisoned, could it somehow have preserved his life or kept him from aging as progressively as he would have otherwise?
So you think that that's how old he was in 1985?
Maybe.
Because he didn't disappear until he didn't disappear until 2012.
I mean, maybe he had the technology and the ability to.
But I just don't think he was that, because he was like a peer of Lori's. So I mean, like, he was like her age, like.
Right.
I guess they just didn't want to have another character play him. But I thought they could have easily had a younger person get dressed up like him, and you'd easily know it was him. He's wearing the frickin' suit.
Didn't Matthew Good play him in the movie?
Yeah.
Would it have been fun if they'd had Matthew Good?
Yes, absolutely.
That would have been good. I mean, even though he's aged since the movie too.
Yeah, they could have easily. This could have been a great.
That been a fun callback.
This could have been a great little just cameo spot for somebody, not even a huge actor, but one of Lindelof's old people.
Justin Theroux would have been
great. Sure, anyone.
He would have been fabulous. Put a little toupee on that man. He would look fabulous.
But yeah, I just thought he was too like. It wasn't. He did look a little younger, and with the video, it's like the way it was, you know, grainy. They could have kind of passed that, but. You can't get over those old man denture teeth, the way he talks. You still have some of the Joe Biden talk to him a little bit, you know? So that was, it's not a big complaint at all. Like, it's not anything that really threw me off. I just thought it was, for this show to take so much detail in everything, it was a little something I just kind of felt like, oh, that's disappointing.
Do you think that it was done intentionally so that there would be some question as to the legitimacy of the video? Like, oh, maybe this is something Veidt did in 2007 or did shortly before he disappeared or was presumed dead to make people think, you know, to take claim and ownership of the squid attack. But I'm sure there would be naysayers out there to say, oh, this video is a fake. This isn't real. This is Veidt.
I think
because he doesn't look young enough, you know, like, is there some like circumstantial evidence that people could point to say, call it a fraud.
Sure. But I think that's kind of just going too deep into the weeds.
But that's how a conspiracy theorist, that's how it gets. Right.
Right.
So in other words, that could be the justification for Lindelof to not make him so young, to be able to create that kind of controversy.
If they went that way, that'd be fine. I'm just going to chalk it up as just they just didn't. I don't know. They just wanted to.
It's funny that Wade doesn't even question the video's legitimacy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I don't know.
Interesting. All right. So here we go. Your favorite scene, Dean. This is our Veidt moment. This time, Veidt is surrounded by a whole lot of new Crookshankses and Phillips. And he himself is getting into his space suit that he seems to have perfected some.
Yeah, it looks like he definitely got some of that buffalo hide.
Yeah, he's definitely upgraded it.
His helmet's awesome looking.
Fun little watches that are embedded in the arm of it. So it's so steampunk.
Yes,
I just love it. So, and then he jumps into the catapult and he's ready, you know, he's ready to be flung into that other dimension and see where the hell it goes. And boy, so are we. We're ready, right? It doesn't take long, although the scene of him flying through the air.
Yeah, the look on his face, he just looks like a little kid that's like, wee!
Oh, it's so great. It was just funny as hell. Jeremy Irons crushing it.
Yeah.
Anyway, where does he land, Dean? Well, he lands on a moon, and I was like, oh, well, he's on the moon, you know, but when he pans over and sees the planet that this moon is surrounding, it's clearly not Earth.
Yeah, Jupiter.
Yeah, I thought it was Mars at first. I didn't think that the planet distinctively looked like Jupiter, but what the hell do I know? Lindelof has, I guess, gone on the record to say that the moon is actually Europa, which is one of the moons of Jupiter. And all around this moon are thousands of dead Phillipses and Crookshankses that he has catapulted up there. So I love this callback that he does have a use for their mangled, broken bodies. And he starts to drag the bodies, which, of course, are very lightweight there in this different atmosphere. But they're all frozen and flat. They're like flat Stanleys. It's so funny. And I love that he's just like breaking limbs off and like he's like they're kindling or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anyway, at this point they are. Yeah.
Yes, they really are. but he's piling them up. We can see he is spelling something. And satellite is orbiting through or orbiting by, we can see in the lens of the satellite the words "save me" and then a letter D. So like there's more past that letter D. Clearly the satellite has picked it up, and Veidt feels very victorious over this moment. And as he's celebrating, he is yanked back into his own dimension or his own little fictitious universe there, his imprisonment.
Let's before we go back to him getting yanked. So
stay on Europa for a minute.
Yeah. So I loved using the bodies. Again, we had talked about this. We've talked about it a couple of times about how in the Black Freighter of the original source, the character uses dead bodies to make a raft. And so since this is the kind of Black Freighter content that he's using dead bodies to make something that's interesting. Who do you think his message is to?
Okay. Of course I've heard what's out there.
Yeah.
I think the one that makes the most sense is Dr. Manhattan, but I don't think he had enough time nor bodies to spell out the word Manhattan.
I just don't understand. Yeah, so maybe he just said, like, save me, doctor, or something.
Yes.
And that seems to be the most obvious, you know, conclusion, but why is it so, because you can tell it's so important for him to have gotten it done before this satellite comes by, and that's why he was doing it for the satellite, right? And so if it was a moon of Mars, I would think if he just spelled it out, he would think, okay, well, he'll be able to see me from here.
Right.
But why would Dr. Manhattan be using these, like, I can't imagine he's got television screens where he's watching satellite imagery. It seems like he's giving a message.
It could be if he's on Mars and he's got satellites going around other planets and he's watching them from Mars.
But it's Dr. Manhattan. Why would he need satellites? He's everywhere all the time. And so I wondered let's make the assumption first that it is to Dr. Manhattan. Maybe he does know that Manhattan is somewhere on Earth, and he's somewhere where he will somehow see this view, you know, this picture.
But if Manhattan is his captor,
right,
and then the D is actually for Dan Driver, who is Night Owl, but that guy's in prison. How the hell's he going to see footage on a satellite? To me, Dan Driver makes no sense at all. I can't find the justification for it being Night Owl.
Yeah, I thought that too was Save Me Dan, maybe, but then I thought that, like, well, how would he get that picture if he's in jail? And again, that's the assumption that he is in jail because that's what we've been told.
Right.
So I don't know. It seems like it should probably end up being, because me and you, we're still under the theory that his captor is Lady True, right?
Right. Yeah, so I was going to say, it seems like he'd be reaching out to Dr. Manhattan because it's Lady True who has him in prison, because she definitely seems part of this clone culture.
Right. So I think what we're going to...
And Manhattan was not about cloning people, right? He couldn't. Or something. The whole deal?
He says he's like going off to try to create life. So we don't really know if that ever was successful or not. I just don't think we still don't have enough information about what happened to Dr. Manhattan. He's the one, when it comes to the PDpedia files, from what we've seen through the show, we have the least information about Dr. Manhattan.
Right.
Even Dan, if we're told that he was arrested and he's in jail, which has come up several times in the PDpedia files, and it was it was subtly mentioned when Keen visits Lori and says, I can even help you get your owl out of the cage, you know, referencing Dan. If we just assume he was arrested and is in jail, that's enough information to say, okay, well, we know where he is. We know what's been going on with him for the past 20 years. He's been in jail. But we still have no clue about what's going on with Dr. Manhattan. We've seen that one image of him on Mars, but then even people, you know, kind of walking back and forth through the streets and stuff have had those side comments of like, well, do you even think he's really on Mars?
Is anything true?
Yeah. So I don't, yeah.
And how funny that line, that common thread, is anything true? And then we've got a character named Lady True who's kind of creating these false narratives, false people. You know, wouldn't it be funny if it was just like, save me, damn it, like some expletive there at the end, because that would be how he would be speaking. And it's just, he's just, because he does make the comment, well, okay, so we're about to get to it. So he's yanked back into his dimension, and the game warden approaches him, tells him that he's violated his confinement terms and is now under arrest. May God have mercy on your soul. And Vite screams out to all of them, your God has abandoned you. And why wouldn't he? You're all pathetic. And then the game warden kicks him in the face, turns to all the Phillips and Crookshanks, and says, alas, Master Vite is correct. Our God has left us, and it's unlikely he'll return. And then kicks Vite again, says, no mercy.
No mercy, yeah.
So, you know, this is where, if this is all Manhattan's doing, and Vite's out there on Jupiter thinking like he was in it with Dr. Manhattan, but now feels like he's like Manhattan's just kind of forgotten about him. It would be funny if the message was still to Manhattan, but was more like, save me, damn it. Like, don't leave me out here. I'm done with this place. I'm over it, or whatever. Or even if it's to Lady True, you know,
maybe,
like,
maybe her first name is Diane.
This could be a misdirect, like still something he sent out for Lady True to see, but still that D is not a person's name.
Maybe it's Save Me Dale, and it's for Agent Petey to put on his lube guy suit, slide on over to Jupiter.
I mean, what else could it seems to me that D is just not going to be relevant. So whoever is holding him prisoner, I think, is who's monitoring that satellite.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though.
Did you... I watched over and over, and I just couldn't tell, but there seems to be a fairly common theory that the game warden is just another Phillips with a mustache.
Yes, Roby mentions that in his email, okay, too, which we'll get to also. But yeah, I watched it a few times too, and I could definitely see they do kind of look alike. It's hard when you put a mask and a mustache on a man. They all look alike.
That if that's true, because I kind of like that better than like, is this some other mysterious character that we should know? Like, yeah.
All right. So we'll hopefully learn more about Vite. I don't know. Surely they're not going to leave a Vite scene out of next week. But, okay, we'll get to it. We'll talk about next week in just a minute. We're coming up on the end here. So I do love that the warden says no mercy, kicks Vite in the head, and we cut to another focus group, this time for Mercy Perfume. Nice transition there. There's another Careless Whisper cover as we get a montage of Wade kind of contemplating his disguise, but then putting it on anyway, heading into the police station. He walks in on a conversation already going on between Red Scare and Panda about American Hero Story, and I love it. They're arguing about whether Hooded Justice is Dr. Manhattan, which is a very funny meta commentary on what the audience is doing about this show right now.
Yeah.
So that was just great. You know, this is like Lindelof premonition time, you know, like he's going to, because obviously he wrote this episode and shot this episode months ago. So before he knew the audience was going to, he had this insight to know everybody's going to be talking about who Mr. Manhattan is. I'm just going to write it right into the show here.
Right.
The show within the show. It was just, God, Lindelof, this is why you're the best. You're just the best. And so anyway, Angela, another funny scene. Angela is at her desk, which is like maybe like 10 yards from Wade's desk. And anyway, she calls him on the phone, or excuse me, Sister Knight calls Looking Glass from her desk to his desk. She asks about the pills, and he again delivers the line, is anything true? She hangs up and walks over to him, and now they're speaking right at his desk, right in front of that cactus, which is front and center. he gives her the pills and tells her their nostalgia, and then he says he wants to help and asks her to tell him what she knows. So she finally sits down and confesses that the pills are her grandfather's and that he was there at the tree when Judd was hanging and that he says he did it, but that's impossible because he's like 100 years old. So she covered it up while she tries to figure out what really happened. Just then, Lori emerges to arrest her. Wade says he's sorry. Angela gets up, tries to get away, but realizes she can't. So she downs the entire bottle of pills. And they cuff her and take her away. And she starts screaming, why, to Wade. And he just sadly puts his mask back on over his face. So before we cut to later that night at his house for our final scene, you have anything else you want to say about the scene? So good.
Yeah, we already kind of even mentioned it earlier. It's, you can't think of this like he's suddenly betraying her.
Yeah, he's not.
I think you can tell that he hates that he's doing this to her, you know, because I think he really does care about her.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that she's the closest thing he has to a friend.
Yeah.
And now he's even throwing that away, but
very defeated look on his face.
Yeah. But of course it's to hopefully protect her.
Yeah. I hope so. And her taking that whole bottle of pills, not
gonna be
good.
She's just going to be shitting and orgasming next week.
All right. Later that night, he pulls up to his house, and of course, the new alarm system is there on his doorstep, which he picks up and immediately throws in the trash and goes inside. And I love the beat where he comes right back out, pulls it out of the trash, and takes it inside. But just then, as soon as he gets back inside, a van pulls up, knocking all the trash cans over. A few cavalry men jump out. They're holding rifles in hands. They cock their guns and are starting to look like enter Wade's house with malice intent. And that's where the episode ends. So what the shit are they doing?
I don't know.
Are they going in there to kill him?
I mean, why else are five dudes with shotguns walking into the house?
That's not good. I will be so upset if they kill him in this next episode or even the one after. Because I think our next episode might be a bottle episode of just Angela on this trip, right?
Possibly.
We might not get any Vite or any resolution to what's happening with Wade.
We'll definitely get a Vite scene because I think you're just always going to have a Vite. But no, we might not get Wade. We might not find the conclusion to this with Wade until the next week. And I don't know. It confused me because it's like, are they just flat out betraying him? Or you're not betraying him, but is Keen just like, hey, we tricked you into doing what we need? Because at that point, why not just kill Angela and him if he didn't care whether he seemed to not care whether she actually died or just was off the board? Then why not just kill them both anyway? He made such a big point to why show him all this stuff? Why go through the whole rigmarole of putting him through this just if you're just going to kill him at the end? So it didn't
make it sense. Add up.
So I'm hoping this is a misdirection of some sort. Maybe they're just coming to grab him. I would love to see him pull like a Rorschach fighting style type thing and just like go into survival mode and beat the shit out of all these guys and, you know, somehow save himself from it. But I don't know.
Well, okay. So, you know, he has got that house set up to where he's probably got little trickster.
That's
little
what I'm thinking too.
Everywhere. So maybe it is right on the nose. They're going in to kill him, but he's going to be able to turn the tables because he's in his home. You know, he's prepared for these kinds of things.
You think like when he's not watching American Hero Story, he's only watching Home Alone movies too. Yeah. So like he's going to have the Christmas ornaments out and the
booby trap central.
Guy's going to go open the door and his hand's going to get burnt and all this stuff. Yeah, it'll be hilarious.
All right, our email from Roby. Thank you, Roby, for emailing. And I should say, Roby emails us the same night of the show. So these are all Roby's original thoughts, and I really appreciate his insight. And thank you, Roby. It's always really good. Thank you for continuing to email us and tweet with us. And you too, dear listener, can email us. MikeTVPodcast@gmail.com. That's MICTVPodcast@gmail.com. So Roby's email opens with, "Forgive me, Dean." So I think that the, what was it? The skinning. The pellet, the battle of the pellets, is over. We can safely say we can put that to bed. So let's just, his thoughts are random all throughout the episode. Oh, look, funhouse mirrors so he can see himself in every direction in all his glory. he picked a great time to be weak in his faith, even if he was stronger, though he would be, or he picked a great time to be weak in his faith because had he been stronger, he would be dead. So yeah, good point. He should look at that as a good thing, but anyway, did Lori take, okay. All right. Roby, I don't know if the Dean's going to get this reference. Did Lori take lessons from Columbo and then quoting her, "Oh, just one more thing"? Do you know Columbo, Dean?
Yes, I'm very aware of things that happened in time.
All right. Well, now we know why LG won't take the mask off. Exactly right. Yes, that mask has zero to do with his powers. Genetic trauma is an actual study. You know, that's funny. Sean said the same thing when we were watching it. He was like, you know, that's a real thing.
The hereditary trauma
study. Yeah, I was like, well, it's dumb. It doesn't surprise me. And then I love this musing, too, from Roby. He goes on to say, I wonder if Liam Neeson starred in Pale Horse. Good one. And then, yes, he says, I was right about Keen. Yeah, Roby did call it on Twitter way back in the beginning, like, I bet Keen's part of this Calvary. So, yeah, correct. Good job there. And then he says, that's not Mars. The moon doesn't look like Jupiter or Saturn. Maybe the moon is Uranus or Neptune, or Uranus, I should say. But no, of course, like I said, Roby said this immediately after the episode aired, so the truth has come out. I agree, that planet did not look distinctive enough to make you immediately go, oh, Jupiter, you know.
I don't know what it was about. As soon as I saw it, in fact, I tweeted out when I saw it that it was Jupiter. It had that. You didn't see the spot, but you did see that kind of the orange and white swirl that Jupiter kind of has that coloring. It wasn't Mars, like, because it wasn't just a big red planet.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I.
All I can say is it clearly wasn't Saturn.
Yeah, it didn't have rings.
Yeah, that's the one I know. And then finally, Roby says, is the warden another Phillips? So, yeah, I think that that's a pretty astute, a pretty accurate call there to think that is just another Phillips clone meant to have a very flimsy disguise on so that he's a little bit more distinguishable.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts then here as we wrap up. What you want to talk about the trailer, what we saw?
You know, you mentioned this last week that you had heard, and I've started hearing from, I guess, probably most of the same sources too, that apparently this next episode is supposed to be the kind of oh shit crazy episode. So I'm wondering if it's only mainly that because if this is going to be a heavy connecting the past and present, obviously Angela is going to be going through these memories that she just swallowed. So it looks like we're going to learn a lot this episode.
It looks like we're going to learn a lot about the Cal's accident too. Some of the scenes they showed, it was Angela in her cop uniform and also Cal as a cop. So I think they were both cops and something happened to make him not want to be a cop anymore, right?
So I wonder if we're going to get, if we're going to maybe get memory, I mean,
her own memories mixed in with it, because you're not supposed to take someone else's.
Maybe these aren't his memories. Maybe somehow he has her memories, or maybe some kind of combination to make her remember certain things. Or maybe, I don't know, he knows events of her life, or maybe seeing events of her life through a different perspective, possibly.
Well, we will definitely
find out.
I can't predict this show anymore. I'm done trying to predict it. But I'm certainly enjoying the hell out of it. I definitely think episode 6 is going to be full of answers. It's going to be, I think we're going to get, no, I think it's Will's memories.
Okay.
I think we're going to get the full story from the moment Will got off of that overturned car as he was trying to escape Tulsa with the little baby. Don't forget, there was a little baby that lived also. Where's the baby? What happened to her? I presume that was a little girl baby. So what happened to her?
Good question.
Could that be the woman who Will eventually marries and they make Angela's father? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think we'll learn a lot this episode. I'm also hoping that we will get set by the end of it to where episode 7 doesn't have to be as much of a setup episode. And so the last three episodes can really be the kind of closing third, the third act of this whole show. And it seems like, especially the way they're releasing the podcast after every three, it definitely seems like Lindelof intentionally has this broken into three kind of parts. And so, yeah, I'm hoping this will be a good, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a fantastic episode.
And then we're going to get another Lindelof podcast from the HBO official Watchmen podcast. So I will be really excited to listen to that. And then we're going to try to get a recap out a little bit sooner than we have been typically as we come up here to the Thanksgiving holiday. We'll get this next episode out before, or at least we'll record it before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then they are running one on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. I did look. Okay. It is running straight through. So
good.
We'll just continue our coverage week to week here and keep bringing them, as hopefully getting them out before the next episode airs. That's our goal at this point. All right. Any closing thoughts here before we wrap up?
Like I said, it gets better every week. So hopefully that trend continues.
Yes. And do we want to give our Twitter handles before we wrap up here? I'll let you do that, Dean.
Sure. Follow us on Twitter. You can find us at MikeTV1 on Twitter, at MikeTV1, and give us any of your questions, thoughts or concerns, or anything else you want to talk about. We do only have about 4 weeks left, so start letting us know maybe what you're thinking of other shows you'd like us to talk about. We're thinking we might be doing Better Call Saul in February, but kind of between the end of this and then kind of December, January, we're going to try to do a few kind of one-off shows. We're going to do a best of the year. We're going to do what we're looking forward to in 2020. And then maybe even just some, you know, one-shot theme shows. So if you got certain shows you want us to talk about, or maybe certain genres, old shows you might want us to talk about at some point, let us know. You can find me at Rockdale_Tiger on Twitter as well, and let me know anything you want me to know. But thanks for listening. Keep listening.
Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.